This is I Ask, They Answer on the Equine Forum on HRRN.
Wider out, quiet one looming into the picture. They're followed by Lord of Speed, Kilauea 3 deep, and back on the fence comes Golden General. Into the stretch, 3/16 to go. Pink Eye still got the head in front with Irish Nip. Laps and Bounds about to drop off, but Quiet One represents big danger on the outside. Past the 8th pole, Irish Nip still a length in front. Pink Eye gets a whiff of immortality as Irish Nip is finding plenty on the lead. Responding to the Pink Eye power, it's Irish Nip surging clear with its history at Hollywood Park. As the big Pink Eye Junior becomes the world's all-time winningest jockey.
That's the way it sounded 24 years ago tomorrow. Michael Rono with the call of Lafitte Pink Eye's record-breaking ride, passing the great Bill Shoemaker. When it comes to Lafitte Pink Eye Jr., what things pop into your head when you hear that name? Plus, what do Dale and Tim think about the decision to run next year's Belmont Stakes at Saratoga? And which of the five recently announced finalists should win the 75th George Wolfe Memorial Jockey Award? Those topics and much, much more are straight ahead on this week's edition of I Ask, They Answer with trainer Dale Romans and turf writer Tim Wilkin. And it's all presented by the University of Louisville Equine Industry Program and the College of Business. And it all comes your way just 30 seconds from right now.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 35 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
All right, guys, we kick off this week's show with a new segment. If we like it, we might bring it back. If we don't like it, we might not. But it is called Like It, Love It, or Hate It. I'm going to bring up a couple of topics that were in the news this past week, and you guys tell me how you feel about it. Do you like it, do you love it, or do you hate it? So here we go. Topic one. With construction continuing at Belmont Park, the 2024 Belmont Stakes is going to be held at Saratoga. The distance will be reduced to 1.25 miles from the current 1.5 mile test of the champion, and the purse will increase to $2 million. NYRA is also planning to include a 4-day Belmont Stakes Racing Festival to coincide with next year's Belmont Stakes. So I ask you, how do you feel about this announcement? Like it, love it, or hate it? Timmy?
Well, I don't hate it. And being an upstate New York guy, I should love it. I don't know if I love it. I guess I'm going to say I like it. The Belmont, obviously they can't run at Belmont Park because they're going through that massive construction down there. And they can't run it at Aqueduct because there's nowhere to sit there anymore because when they put the casino in, they lost most of their seats. It's got to go to Saratoga. It's a novel idea. Yes, it is. But there's, once it gets up here, you're not going to be running the Belmont at 1.5 miles because of the track configuration. That Saratoga track's 1.125 miles. So they're going to run it at 1.25 miles. And if there is a horse going for the Triple Crown and he wins the Belmont, which was always called the Test of the Champions, to go 1.5 miles, it's not going to be called the Test of the Champions up here, there'd be a huge asterisk after it. I think it's a novel idea. I think the people in this area are going to love it, the people that are coming from out of town, they're going to think they're in Louisville North because they're going to get gouged pretty good with the prices. But, having races at Saratoga anytime is a good idea. But the one thing that I'm keeping in the back of my head, I'm wondering if they don't just make an announcement at some point saying we're staying up there from, Belmont time through Labor Day, which yep. I think would just be horrible. So, yeah, I like the idea. I like the idea of the Belmont Stakes being at Saratoga. Let's see how it goes. It's going to probably be here for 2 years. I applaud NYRA because it's the only place they could bring it with Belmont under construction. But I do have my doubts about some things.
Yeah, Timmy, I'm glad you bring that up because you remember Saratoga always used to be the August place to be. Then it became the summer place to be, and it wouldn't surprise me if in the back of the powers that be at NIRA, in the back of their minds, they're not thinking, let's see how this goes, kick off Saratoga with the Belmont Stakes, and then, you know, go from there and extend
the meet
even further.
But the thing, too, Mike, they have to bring all the equipment up here from New York.
Yep.
And, you know, and then they'd have to take it back to New York, then bring it back up again. So I'm just throwing that out there.
Yep. Dale, what do you think?
Well, I love it considering the other options. I mean, I didn't want it to go to Aqueduct again. You know, Belmont's been run at Aqueduct a couple of times when they were doing their construction on the building they're knocking down right now. But I think it's a great idea to make it a four-day festival of racing. I think it'll be a lot of fun. Hope I have something to run. And I know that Mark Holliday, being the chairman of the NIRA, anything he does first class, and it's going to be a wonderful event. I'm not worried about all that other stuff. We'll worry about that later. But we're just trying to get through the construction at Belmont Park this year.
We'll see how it all plays out. June of 2024, the Belmont Stakes, the third leg of the Triple Crown, going to Saratoga. Again, run at a mile and a quarter instead of a mile and a half because of the configuration of the racetrack up there at Saratoga. All right, number two. During the University of Arizona Racing Symposium this past week, the program's Student of the Year, Eric DeCoster, suggested revamping claiming races by moving to a handicap rating system in those events and making all races optional claiming races. Dale, how's this one hit you? Do you like it, love it, or hate it?
I love it on paper. I hate it in practicality. I don't think it could ever really be done. I mean, it's one of those things that on paper sounds like it would be fine, but it would be a logistical nightmare. I don't know who's going to do all the handicapping for all the racetracks around the country that we have racing. It's not like in Hong Kong where they run 84 days for the whole year and they don't have any claiming races. They just put them in classes. I think it sounds good on paper, but not something that would ever work. So I'm going to have to hate it.
I mean, I love the fact that we have these new voices, young voices that are interested in the sport. And he makes some good points, but, you know, I mean, it's confusing just the way I think a lot of people are confused just the way races are written anyway, but I think that his ideas are okay. What track is going to do it? That's the one thing that I don't know if there's anything that could come with that. Like, a track has to say, oh, yeah, we like this idea, we're going to do it. But, you know, hats off to this kid for making a stand on that. And I know he's gotten some support from, you know, industry leaders, which is a good thing, and I'm sure that makes him feel good. I mean, I like the fact that he's took a stand on this, and we'll see what happens. But
I agree with Tim. It's good to have that young energy and young ideas, and I'm sure this kid's going to come up with some really good ones that I love down the road. I went out there and spoke one time, and that's a fabulous place. And if you ever really want to get re-energized about the game, just go out there and talk to those kids that have gone to college to learn more about it.
Well, one of the people that responded positively to Eric's comments on social media was Walker Hancock, president of Claiborne. That's a pretty big voice. And Walker said, "This is much needed and long overdue. With declining foal crops, a handicap system would help in a lot of different ways." Dale, is there a place in racing now for a handicap system? Handicap races have gone by the wayside.
Well, I mean, if you had handicap races, that's one thing where you're going to do all the waiting and stuff but there's a reason they've gone to the wayside. A lot of people didn't like them. And the more you put someone's opinion into the game, the more the problem is. I think the claiming system's a great game. I like it. I think if a guy's willing to risk selling his horse and putting it in for a tag, then he deserves to win the race. And I think that it also gives people in the game, people outside the game, an avenue to get involved in the sport without having to be filthy rich and go to the sales and buy young horses. I can understand why anybody in Lexington would want that, because the only way you can really get a horse is through the auctions. And I think the handicap claiming system, there's nothing wrong with it right now. Now, as far as going for handicap races for the stakes, I'd love to see more handicaps brought back. I thought those were good races. You know, it was they all handicapped by weight back then. But you don't see it anymore. And one of the biggest reasons is a lot of people got it wrong. They were putting in horses too light or horses too heavy, and it was a difficult system.
Yeah, if you have a real good horse, do you want to, with a new system like that, maybe they'd be carrying 140 pounds. That's crazy.
Yep.
All right, let's move on to the next topic, and this one involves the jockeys, because Santa Anita announced the finalists for the 75th George Wolfe Memorial Jockey Award, with the winner set to be announced in February. The Wolfe Award is, of course, a highly coveted award by most jockeys, as the winner is determined by a vote of nationwide riders, so it comes from their peers. This year's finalists are Junior Alvarado, Alex Berzer, Julian Leperoux, Edwin Maldonado, and Rodney Prescott. Timmy, who should win this one?
Well, you know, I think they're all deserving, but I think Junior Alvarado's probably got the inside track. You know, he's going to get a lot of steam because he rode Cody's Wish, and that story resonated with people all throughout the land. And, you know, the fact that the relationship that Junior had with that horse, he was the, you know, he's the pilot of that horse who was the feel-good story for racing because of the late, great Cody Dorman. So I think Junior Alvarado, who was a fine rider, but don't get me wrong. I mean, it's not like he's – I mean, he deserves any accolade he gets. He's already won the Mike Venezia Award in New York, which is a prestigious award in its own right. I think that Junior could get the double here and get the George Wolfe.
Yeah, you're not going to get me to pick one of these guys. They're all deserving, like you said, and I got to see them every day. So, and I've met or know, I think, all of them, and a couple of them I call friends, and they're all deserving. And this is an award outside of racing. It's not really what you've accomplished on the track or how many races you won, how many big races you won. It's about what you've done for the game, what you've done, how you've handled yourself during your career, and all those guys are well-deserving. It's a shame there's only one award to give out.
Yeah, no, I agree. It was a little bit of an unfair question to ask it that way and say who should win. I think all of them are extremely deserving. They represented themselves, as Dale said, on the track and off the track the right way. They're good family people. They do things the right way for the community. And we'll see who walks away with the hardware coming up in February. All right, it is that time of the show where we say hello to our good friend Nick Zito, and you guys get to tell me if the following statement is right or wrong.
What do you think? Right or wrong?
All right, only one for you this week, but it's a big one. The New York State Gaming Commission on December 4th upheld a hearing officer's recommendation to enforce a 10-day suspension and a $1,000 fine for trainer Todd Pletcher stemming from a meloxicam positive and a post-race test from Forte following the 2022 Hopeful Stakes. I said 2022 Hopeful. Is their decision right or wrong?
Yeah, right or wrong. Am I right? What do you think? Right or
Dale,
wrong?
Dale, what do you think?
Oh, I mean, they're right. If he broke a rule, if a rule was broken, if there was a medication it wasn't supposed to be, yeah, you have to penalize the person. And it would have been the same no matter who it was, whether it's Todd or anybody else, they would have gotten the same penalty. Now, if you want to say if it was the rule fair, that's a whole different argument. But the rule was there and it was broken, and you got to take your penalty.
Yeah, I mean, Dale's right about that, but the thing that just gets underneath my skin on this is it took so long. It was 7 months before they even announced it, and then they come out and say that you know, now that the Gaming Commission's going to uphold it, and you know, the HISA came out and they had said that under their rules that wouldn't have been a violation. That's what I'm sure is driving Mike Rapoli into the legal game, but the suspension and the fine for Todd is basically a slap on the wrist, 10 days and what, $1,000? But the way the laws are written, I guess you have to say that you have to do this. But I just question the way it was done, which doesn't make it right, but I just question the way that it was handled. It was almost like it almost looked like it was personal to me.
Well, I can tell you that owner Mike Rapoli did not think that the decision was right. He thinks it's all wrong. He went on to say, look, no one is shocked by this. The Kangaroo Court has spoken. They spent 7 months making this decision, and they could have made it in 10 minutes before we had the hearing.
Yeah.
Well, he's probably right about that.
Absolutely, he's right about that.
You know, I mean, I think I just I don't know how much personal stuff gets into this, but I hope it doesn't. But I'm not saying it isn't.
Well, you do the crime, you got to do the time, I guess, is one way to look at it. And so that decision has been upheld, that announcement coming out this past week. That is right or wrong. Nick Zito will be back with us next week for that segment here in the show. One more topic to get to before Dale and Tim make their one final point of the week. And I thought this was kind of cool. You guys know how much I enjoy looking back on specific dates in racing history and talking about the history of the game. Well, it was on this day 24 years ago that jockey Lafitte Pincai Jr. tied Bill Shoemaker's all-time record by registering his 8,833rd lifetime win aboard IB Casual in the fourth race at Hollywood Park. He would break Shoemaker's record the following day, and we heard that call as we opened the show here this morning. What comes to mind when you hear the name Lafitte Pincai Jr.? Dale?
There's a couple of things. I mean, other than being such a great rider, it was the discipline he had to ride at the weights he had to ride back then. If he were riding at the weights we are today, he might still be riding. There's always this whole story. I don't know how true it is. It and he and Wayne Lucas were flying somewhere, and they brought around the peanuts, and Lafitte didn't take any. But he took a napkin out of his pocket and opened up, and there was one peanut. And Wayne said, "What is that, your lunch?" And he said, "No." He broke it in half and said, "This is my lunch." And he ate half a peanut on the flight to wherever they were going. But the great discipline. The other thing that always comes to mind, if you've ever been to the Derby Museum, and you see their in-the-round slideshow that they put on, and you hear him talk about the day that he won the Derby on swell. And he said he prayed that day, and he said he never asked God to make him win, but he said on that day when he was going out on a swell, he said, "If you could just find it in your time to just give me a little extra push, I would appreciate it." And that thing still gives me chills every time I go in there and listen to him talk about riding swell in the Kentucky Derby. Arguably the greatest of all time.
See, he's second all time still in wins, over 9,000 wins. And I just want to do an amendment to your story, Dale. He also had a half a cup of bouillon with that half a peanut that he had as he and Wayne were flying from California to New York. And I guess Wayne had a whole big old meal right in front of Lafitte. But, you know, you think of Lafitte and he just won the Eclipse five times, and he won the Belmont Stakes 3 years in a row. He was on three of the Woody Stevens horses, Cielo, Caveat, and Swale. And, you know, winning the Belmont Stakes 3 years in a row as for a rider is that's rarefied air. There's only one other guy that did it, and that was back in the late 1800s, Jim McLaughlin. You know, Lafitte Pincai, I didn't deal with him a lot, but when he would come to Saratoga, he just had a lot of class about him. And just if you saw him with his shirt off, he looked like a middleweight boxer or a lightweight boxer. I mean, he was cut and he was in such great shape, strong, you know, a very accomplished, obviously, rider in everything he did. And, you know, just a humble guy. And, one of the all-time greats for sure.
What strikes me about Lafitte Pincai Jr., I guess Russell Bays would probably be the same way, because it seems like most of these Hall of Fame jockeys are. When I get a chance to sit down and visit with Lafitte in any interview, I just bring up the name of a horse or just throw a specific race to him, and he remembers every detail of that horse, of that race, where he was at every point in the race, what happened at every point in the race. It's still so vivid to him. And I think all of those great jockeys kind of have that memory where they can look back on some of the rides that they've had, or most of the rides that they've had, and recall every single detail. And that, to me, is just so incredible.
Yeah, a great, great disciplined athlete.
How about this? Think about this. So Russell Bays is the all-time leading jockey in wins with 12,842. Lafitte Pincai Jr., 9,530 in second place. If you're wondering if anybody is even close to catching him, Perry Oots is in fifth, and he has 7,418. He's the closest active jockey to to Lafitte Pincai for that second spot right now, and he really ain't that close. John Velasquez, 6,555. He's not going to catch Lafitte before he finishes up. And then you come back to T.D. Houghton, who has 6,192. That's it. Those are the three active riders that are trying to get to that level. They're not going to catch this one. That record or that second place total is going to stand for a very long time, guys.
It definitely is. 100%. 100%.
Yep, Lafitte Pincai, one of the greatest of all time. Just so, so good. All right, just a couple minutes left in the show. It gives us time for you guys to make your one final point of the week. So, Timmy, I'll come to you first. What is your final point on this ninth day of December?
You know, I want to give a sky point to a couple of horses we lost in the last few days. Sun King, who was trained by Nick Zito and owned by Tracy Farmer, was such a cool horse. Always gave it everything he had whenever he went out. I still remember when he got beat in the Whitney in 06, I think it was, by Invisor, by a nose. And, you know, a hard-knocking horse. We lost him at the age of 21. He was at Old Friends. And then on Friday, we just, Spitestown, the great sprinter, the champion sprinter of 2004, passed on. And, you know, what a fast horse he was. So I just wanted to mention those two because they were two really good horses. But Sun King was one of my favorites.
Yeah, talking about Lafitte brought up a memory of mine, and it's one of my favorites in horse racing. I just will share with everybody. Over in the Clocker Stand, I was sitting this morning at Gulfstream Park several years ago. I got to sit there in the presence of Lafitte Pincai, Angel Cordero, and Jacinto Vasquez and Alan Jerkins, and just sit back and listen to them for an hour after the track had closed. We just sat up there and told horse stories. And this is such a great sport, and it just brought back a memory of that day.
Yeah, well, I bet you they didn't have a chauffeur to drive him from Kentucky to Florida.
No, my little chauffeur took care of me. She drove 1,300 miles on our whirlwind trip, but we finally got here.
Did she drive the entire way?
Yeah, she drives. She does all the driving. I just sit over there and read it for him.
Wow, must be nice.
It is.
She stops and gets your lunch for you, too?
She takes pretty good care of me. As much as I complain about her, she does pretty good.
Dale Romans would not be Dale Romans without Tammy Fox. I can guarantee you that.
Absolutely not. We're like Yogi and Boo Boo.
I love it. Guys, listen, enjoy the weekend. We're going to do this all over again next week. Good luck at the races, and we'll talk again.
All right, fellas. Thanks.
All right. If you have a topic that you want to hear Dale and Tim debate and discuss, simply send it to me, Mike@horseracingradio.net, and I will get that worked into the show. I can tell you they absolutely love getting topics from our listeners. They're always so unique. And if you have a question on your mind, get it off your mind. Send it to me, Mike@horseracingradio.net, and I'll work it into next week's show for you here on the network. I Ask, They Answer is presented by the University of Louisville Equine Industry Program and the College of Business. I'm back with more. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, where racing comes to talk.